Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast and this special double edition this weekend where I interview both Paloma Estevez and Reed Thomas Lawrence together, who make up the band Son and the Saint. This time, it's all about Reed, and just like Paloma, he was kind enough to send me a bio. So here we go. Reed Thomas Lawrence is a Central Oregon-born singer, songwriter, and guitarist whose raw, soulful sound was shaped by a youth spent skating, exploring, and playing along to his family's worn vinyl collection. Influenced by legends from Stevie Ray Vaughan to Nirvana, he built his voice through years of touring, writing, and producing across genres. Now based in LA as the co-creator, guitarist, and lead vocalist of Son and the Saint, Reed channels that restless spirit into cinematic songwriting, balancing grit and vulnerability in a sound that feels both timeless and alive. He's also deeply funny, everybody, and we laughed our way through this conversation. And as you'll hear, he's deeply interested in the mystery that is life. We talk music, we talk fate, we talk all sorts of things, including that Reed really struggled earlier in life and his stories of being a kid in a town that didn't know what to do with him really resonated with me. I told him at the end of the interview that he and Paloma go together like chocolate and peanut butter, and he agreed. I hope you agree too, and I hope you enjoy this conversation. As well, do not miss the Easter egg at the very end of the long form interview. It's just a little bit more of my conversation with Reed and just a little bit of fun that I threw in there at the end. All right, let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Reed Thomas Lawrence.
I was a really wild kid growing up. I mean, I got kicked out of public school 4 or 5 times and then put into private school. And then they tried to homeschool me and that didn't work. And then I got kicked out of the private schools and they tried to put me back in public school and I got kicked out again. And then finally they put me into a Christian school, and the Christian school is just like torture for me. It was like torture, you know, and I would like show up to school wearing like a Slayer t-shirt or a Pantera t-shirt. And I was like a skater kid, you know, so I was just like, and they would be like, we're going to pray for you. And I would just like get under their skin left and right, you know. Yeah, my name's Reed. I'm a musician and an editor and audio guy and, you know, kind of all around artistic dude, but more so a musician and songwriter. That's what I've always been, but kind of veered away from it. And I love connecting with the earth and nature and grounding. I love being barefoot and going on barefoot hikes. And I'm a super playful, funny, happy dude, but very reserved with people when I meet him for the first time. So after you get to know me, you'll be like, oh wow, he's like a lunatic. But when I first meet him, he's like, seems so guarded and like something like that, I guess.
I love that. I would like to hang out with the lunatics anytime. They're really fun.
That's how Paloma describes me. She's like, nobody would ever believe me how like crazy you are and like how much you like to make me laugh and get crazy, you know, around the house. But around other people, I'm just like, I just play it cool, you know? So I don't know why.
That's awesome. Well, did you grow up in California?
I didn't. I grew up in Oregon, Bend, Oregon.
Ooh, that place has changed a little bit, huh?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So much. I actually grew up outside of Bend, which is, I don't usually say the name because it's like a town that everybody's like, oh, you're from that redneck town, you know, Prineville. But it's a very podunk kind of redneck, like cowboy, you know, rancher town. And very rough place to grow up in, like completely different from Bend. But I moved to Bend when I was a teenager. And then I just say I'm from Bend because Bend is where I got into music heavily. And it's kind of where my roots are, you know, so.
I had someone say something interesting to me. They said, you know, Bend and Santa Fe are quite similar with that kind of high desert vibe. You'd agree?
I would 100% agree. I love Santa Fe. I've taken many trips to Santa Fe with my uncle. He's an avid outdoorsman. He's obsessed with, you know, Native American culture and just all of it. And like all the Indian tribes up through there, the Hopi, and I don't know if it's the Hopi right there, but all through up there, all the different tribes. And we would go and we would explore all these old Western towns and drive through Santa Fe. And just, it's so cool there. Just the art culture that, I don't know what that street is where you walk on the back street, but it goes forever.
And Canyon it's just Road.
Yes. And it's all the artists. And we met so many artists every time we go and just hang out and drink wine and like look at their art. And that's how Bend is, really. I mean, they have a Friday night art walk and you drink wine and you walk around and people are playing music. And I was one of those bands like playing, you know, side of the street. And yeah, it's basically the same. Amazing.
My God, I love your life. You're like a troubadour who drinks wine, which I seriously appreciate.
But I know, you know, I mean, you can't not drink wine. I mean, you can, but I don't know. I couldn't see my life without having a glass of wine every now and again.
I lived in Portland for 23 years. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. So did not really, I got to Bend a few times, but not a lot.
Yeah. I was going to say, you kind of seem like an Oregon / I don't know. I don't know where you were grew up, but you remind me of like an Oregon girl. So
really? Oh my, I've gotten that twice in the last month. That's funny. That's funny. I guess that must mean I'm nice because most of the Oregon women I met were very nice and very kind.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But, I think that's it. And down to earth. Yeah. Down to earth. Yeah. It seems like you're down to earth. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah.
It's Portland is amazing.
So
it's like,
how did you end up in California?
Yeah. Man, let's see. As long as I can remember, I was doing music and working random jobs, bartending and did construction and just anything I could do. And I just always hated my jobs and I just wanted to do music. And so I started playing around. I met a guy from LA who was a big producer guy, or he saw a music video I did with one of my friends in Bend, a guy who did all the commercials and stuff in Bend and ski movies and films out of Bend. And so I got lucky because I could go use his studio and we made a couple music videos and this guy saw it from LA and he said, I want to meet that guy. And he ended up coming to LA for a thing and we got together and I had just started writing songs like when I was like 18 into my 20s. So I wasn't really like a great songwriter, but I was like, I love to write songs. I love to like make up songs. And him and I met up, this guy, Francho, who's a producer. And, he said, you know, I've got a bunch of instrumental tracks. Like you want to try to write to him. And I was like, oh yeah. And I'd never done that before. And he just gave me all these instrumental tracks. And I went and I just went home and I listened to him and like all these lyrics came out. It just like, it like all the songs wrote themselves. I was so inspired. And I called him up the next day and I was like, yeah, I finished all those songs. There was like 10 or 12 songs. And he was like, what? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, I'll send him over. And like, I think I like emailed him like a thing, like a package or folder or something, but he listened to him and he was like, dude, what are you, this is crazy. And so we went into the studio like a week later and we just recorded this whole album and it was amazing. And what was crazy is he was connected to all my heroes in LA, which were like Jack Johnson's drummer, the Beastie Boys keyboard player, you know, all these guys I grew up like listening to, guys from Ozo Motley, you know, like even like the Sublime guys from Sublime, like the drummer and the bass player. And so he knew this whole circle, like Ben Harper and the producer of Ben Harper, JP Plunier, all these guys. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. And so he started getting these guys to play on the music. And then the next thing you know, I'm like in LA and I'm sleeping on Adam Topol's couch, which is Jack Johnson's drummer. And it was just like so weird. It was like a very surreal and everything just happened like really quick. And so him and I started playing a bunch of shows and we got a booking deal and I got signed to this booking agency. And so I don't know, to make a long story short, I started coming to LA more. And then I eventually just like moved here because I wanted to be here for the music, for all those opportunities, and yeah, moved many other places after that, but that was the start of kind of the LA journey. And then, you know, that morphed into moving to Nashville for like 4.5 years and then back to LA. And then, you know, it was kind of a whirlwind of life changes and things that have taken me to music, away from music, and then like back around to music again, like with Paloma, which is even a crazier story. It's so weird how things happen in life. It's like you said, with the podcast and COVID, like you just don't know what one little thing is going to like lead to. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want you to know that I have been to Nashville. I was in swing choir in high school and I've performed on that little Opryland stage.
Yes.
So, you know, near and dear to my, I was telling Paloma yesterday that I'm like a bull in a china shop. Nobody should ever have me sing and dance at the same time. It's like a nightmare and bad things happen. But, you know, I have to say, what a Cinderella story, right? You're 18, you're 19. And your life blows up like this. You must have thought, what is happening right now?
Yeah. I mean, I started writing at 18, but I think it happened. I'm trying to remember when all this happened. I think it was 2008. So I must have been in my late 20s, like 24, 25, somewhere in there. But that was when it all started happening, which was really weird because I spent, you know, 18 to like 24 kind of figuring out music and songwriting and like, oh, there's this thing where you can like pick up the guitar and channel, you know, these things come through their songs. Like I wasn't interested in playing other people's music ever. All my friends were learning covers and I was just like, no, like I want to write these songs, you know, like they kind of like they're out there and you pick them out of the air. And so, you know, yeah.
She also told me the hilarious story of how you came up with your name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The day before or something, or you had a list of like 1,000 names.
Oh man. Picking a band name is like, I don't even know. It's probably like picking like a name for your child or something. I don't know. It's like, no, 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 no. The whole list was like, no. And then we finally hit a name where we were like, I don't hate this, but I'm not sure. I don't know if I like it. And then it was like, we had to pick a name. So it was just, okay. It's Son of the Saint. That's it.
That's okay. And because, yeah, because I, you know, I hear that name and I think, okay, one is the son, one is the saint. Is that,
was yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah.
Was that, so who is who? I'm just curious.
I don't even think we even thought that far into it because we were just like, okay, we don't hate this name. But I guess now it just, we tell people like it changes, you know, like sometimes I'm the son, okay. Sometimes Paloma's the son, sometimes I'm the saint, you know, it shifts.
Yeah.
So we trade places in that aspect, whether the sun is good or bad or the saint is good or bad. I don't know. I don't know what they are.
I do like asking this question because I think it's fun and, you know, I'm all about fun, but what did you want to be when you were a kid? Like, what did you imagine for yourself? Was it music? Was it artist? Was it writer or what did you think when you were a kid? You're like, I mean, I get astronaut a lot. A lot of people are like, I wanted to be an astronaut, which I find that's fascinating. So
cool. Yeah.
But so I'm just curious.
Yeah. I think, you know, school was so hard for me. I've always thought maybe I might be a little bit on the spectrum because my brain works so differently than everyone else. I mean, I cannot read a book to save my life and remember and remember anything. I have to listen to audio. And I never knew that when I was a kid. I never knew my learning style, even through college. Like I struggled with everything. Everything was so hard. And once I learned that I could listen to audio and remember every single word, I could listen to an audio book like on double speed and I'll remember everything from the audio book, like every single thing. I was like, oh my God, like that's it. That's how I learned. So when I got my driver's license, I read the driver's manual all the way through. And then I went back and I listened to it for like 2 or 3 days and I remembered everything. And that's how I passed. But if I had to read through the driver's manual, there's no way and that was before audiobooks. So I didn't know if I would have had that in school, it would have saved my life. So I always say like, you know, school for kids is like, I wish they would find a way to cater. I think they are now, but like find a way to cater to each kid, because every kid is so different, you know, and like every kid's learning style is so different. But when I was a kid, I don't know, I guess, you know, I didn't like school. I kind of hated school because of that. And I veered towards art, you know, I painted and I drew, and then I found photography when I was a teenager. And, you know, I just would take pictures and draw pictures, and I was assigned to draw murals on the school wall, and I would get out of class to go and do that. You know, I would always find a way to get out of class to do something art related. But like, yeah, I don't know, when I think back, I guess art, to be like an artist or a painter or a drawer. I mean, I was obsessed with drawing and painting. So I never wanted to be an astronaut or, you know, anything else other than like creative. Like, I was obsessed with art class. That was the only class I liked out of all the classes.
That's awesome. I
would just
that.
Get so excited for art class. You know, everything else was like just dreading, like, oh God, science, like, oh, math, like, oh God, you know, but art was like, I'm so pumped, you know, because yeah. I knew I would just nail it.
Yeah. I mean, math made me scared. I appreciated that for a lot of it, there were rules. And if I just learned the rules, I was okay.
Yeah.
The rules made me happy, because I thought all I have to do, like your driver's manual, right? You're learning the rules.
Yeah, sure.
And that made everything easier.
I envy that. I really do. I envy that, because I feel like rules to me are so hard. Like it's almost like when somebody says, this is the way you do it, I'm always like, I know that there's an easier way. I know I can like take a different route, and maybe I can break all those rules and like take a back route, and a lot of times it makes it even harder for me, because I don't know. I've always struggled with the rules, but I envy that, because like it just seems like everybody else, it was so easy to just follow the steps. And I'm just like math was just like, oh gosh, it was like pulling teeth, man. I just sit there and like think and like look at it, and it would just be like glazed. And even still, you know, to this day, I'm not. My grandma, she could just do like math in her head, and I was just like, I have no idea how you do that, you know, like hard math problems.
What? Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It would be like 1,000, you know, divided by, I don't even know. Or she would do like multiplication, like 228 times. It would just be, she would know every answer. And I'm like, I can't do that. And my grandpa too, everybody in my family were like good at math, but I just couldn't.
Wow.
So I'm envious of that skill. 'Cause you know, being too far right brain is a little like, you know, I think you feel like a little bit of an outcast sometimes, because your brain is wired so differently.
Yeah. Yeah. But. Well, you know, I've always thought of music. No, I cannot compose a song to save my life at all. But I've always thought of music as being a little bit mathematical.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think
it, like, yeah.
When you're composing, I'm sure you don't think about that. And the creation comes from some other place inside you. Right. Obviously this huge wellspring of creativity that you have in general, photography, drawing. I can't draw either. I'm just putting that out there. It's like,
right.
Yeah. So
I can't either anymore. I used to be able to, but now if I sat down, it's just like, you know, scribbles, but you know, it's definitely, I think you have to keep up on what your art is, you know, like whatever that's going to be, like daily, you know, you practice it daily, but yeah, I think it is mathematic. Once you lay it down, once it comes out, I think it's mathematic, because there's definitely formulas, and I do see patterns and formulas in playing, like playing, when I learned how to play guitar, I learned all the scales, and it just opened up so much for me, because I was trying to figure everything out by ear, and that worked to a certain point, but like learning these scales, it was like a roadmap, and it was like, now I know where everything's at. And it was like, I could just like play with people and use my ear, you know? So no matter who was playing, I could sit down and just back them up and just play lead and kind of improvise. And that just opened up such a huge, so there definitely is, you know, math and patterns and technique to, plane for sure. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, do you come from a creative family?
Creative deniers or creatives in denial, I guess.
Wait, what does that mean?
Like everybody in my family is so talented, but they all like got like office jobs because they didn't believe in themselves. And they all like, sorry, mom, sorry, Uncle Stu, but like, that's the truth. Like my uncle is an insane songwriter. I mean, he could have been like Willie Nelson. He writes these songs that he'll play for people at parties and they're in tears, you know? And the words he writes is like, at one point I was trying to do an album with him because I was like, you got to get your songs out there. And hopefully maybe one day I can still do that. I just, there's always something going on with me and then it takes away from that. But my mom is an amazing piano player and singer. And, you know, we grew up around my grandfather who was a little bit negative, and I think he rubbed off a lot on the kids. And I think my mom and my uncles, and I think he was really hard on everybody. And some of us, it pushed me. You know, my grandpa would be like, oh, you know, you'll never do that, or you'll never do this, or you'll probably give it up or quit. And I would kind of laugh, and then I would go and I would come back a week later and I would be playing like Stevie Ray Vaughan. And because I told him, I'm like, I'm going to learn Stevie Ray Vaughan. And he would be like, oh, yeah, you know, like, yeah, right. Or then I said, I'm going to go play these coffee shops and bars and I'm going to get paid to play. And he'd be like, oh, you know, he'd kind of like laugh at me. And I would come back and I'd be like, yeah, I just played this club. I just played this. So, you know, I think they took it literally and internalized it. And it was like, oh, you can't do that. You've got to have a real gig. And then they never really pursued that. They still do it on the side, but it's not, it's definitely a hobby, and that's fine. But yeah, they're so talented. So talented, wow. Musically. Yeah. And then it goes all the way back to my great, great grandfather was a composer for the Portland Symphony and built violins. And my grandma's brother was a piano player. He never learned a note of music, and he could just play, you know, that Bumblebee yes. song, the one he could play it. Like it was like no big deal. And he would go play for the theaters around Portland. And, you know, I mean, so yeah, the music and all the sisters on my grandma's side, they were all musicians or they played music. And even my grandma, I would hear her humming melodies. And so I think it's under the surface, but nobody really took it, you know, to the extreme. And even I'm guilty of that too, of fighting the internal battle of like, oh, you can do this. No, you can't do this. Oh, you can do this. And I have Paloma to thank for that, because she's so driven. She's just like laser focused.
And she is. She
laser
was
laser focused. You can't stop her.
She was telling me, you know, I said, how did you two kind of meet or like, you know, decide to form your duo? And she said, let me tell you, she's like, I was networking and, you know, just meeting everybody and saying, nope, 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 like, nope, nope, nope. And she said it took at least months, if not years, but it's like something she wanted to do was find someone that she could be in a band with where they could cultivate their own music and do their own thing. And then she said, well, I don't want to tell you what she said, but what was it? How did this happen?
It was absolutely wild because I wasn't looking for anyone. In fact, I was to a point, I was coming out of a relationship and I was so burnt out on just relationships. And, you know, I came back from Nashville to LA. I'll try to make it really kind of tie it all together really quickly. But like, I came back from Nashville to LA and I had been married for about 9 years. And, you know, we were two different people. She's an amazing person, but we were just trying so hard to fit a square peg in a round hole. And, you know, she sacrificed for me to do music in Nashville, and she kind of worked for a while and I did that. And then I also worked for her so she could do acting here in LA. And you know, it got to that point where we just went our separate ways. I mean, she kind of gave up on acting. I gave up on music, and I got a real job. I got into editing to make money for film and TV. And I got kind of stuck in that world of having a salary gig, working for ad agencies and post-production companies. And it was great. You know, don't get me wrong. I like so grateful because it like paid my bills, but I just was so miserable, like so miserable. I was just like working at this post-production company, very well-known one here in LA, but across the street was Universal Music. And I had been signed to them previously at Interscope Records. And I had to go and park at their parking garage every day at Universal and go to work for a post-production company and sit in an edit bay and do editing that I just was like, this is creative, but it's not me, you know, like it's not music, it's not audio. And so to make a long story short, you know, 9 years of that, 8 years of that, and just being completely losing yourself from music and me, you know, being single for a long time and then dating and then having bad luck there as well. And being on a mountaintop one day and like running, because I used to run a lot and my back was hurting. I kind of have back stuff every once in a while. And I was just in a bad place. And I was like desperate. I was like, you know, what do you want me to do, God? If you don't want me to do music, what do you want me to do? And it was weird because in that moment, this guy came out of the bushes and he was like barefoot and he was like walking and he had like long black hair down to his waist. Sorry, I don't mean to take this on such a weird like journey, but it's how it happened. It's how it happened with Paloma. So at least I believe it's how it happened. It may be a coincidence, but he came up and he like came right up towards me and I was a little nervous. I was like, you know, I've been around in LA for a while and I know how to watch my back and he comes and stands right next to me. And I was like, just weirded out by this guy. And he's like, you probably think it's strange that I'm not wearing any shoes. And I was like, it's like, no, it's cool, man. Like, you know, yeah, whatever. And he was like, no. In my culture, my ancestors believe that when you take your shoes off, you connect to the earth and the earth heals your body and you can clear everything in your life and in your mind from connecting to the earth. He's like, that's why so many people in today's world are so in a cloud and so confused and they don't know what to do is because they've all lost connection to the planet and to the earth. And it was weird. It was like, he was talking to me and I was like taking it all in. And I was like, oh, this is really crazy. And then he said, you know, another thing you can do, he's like, you should do it. You should take your shoes off today. And I was like, okay. And he was like, you know, another thing you can do is pick up stones. He's like, everywhere I go up here, I move stones around. And at this point I started to think he was a little crazy, but he was like, you know, I there'll be a stone in front of me and I'll grab it and I'll move it. And he's like, some of the stones I'll blow into the stones and I'll put my intentions into the stone. And then I take the energy from the stone. And he's like, what you don't realize is these stones have been sitting here for hundreds of years, thousands of years. And then you move those stones and it moves the energy. And he says, what happens is if you do this and you barefoot, you start to create this like quantum web of energy all around you, wherever you go. And he says, it like helps you in your life. And then he like kept going. He talked about like mushrooms and peyote. And then he was just like, okay, it was good talking to you. And he like left. And I was just like standing there and I was like, what is happening? Like, and so he left and I just kind of like thought about everything. And I took my shoes off and I took my shoes off and I hiked the rest of the hike barefoot. And it was like really painful. And I was like, oh God. And then after a second, it just like started to hit me. I was like, oh damn, like, this is like doing something to me. Like, this is like, something's happening. And so the next day after work, I got off and I was like, I have to go barefoot. And it became like an addiction. And every night after work, I couldn't wait to get off work to go barefoot hike. And it was the weirdest thing. And then all of a sudden, like, all this clarity started to come back to me of like music and everything. And then my buddy from another band asked me to play guitar. He was like, you should come and play in my band. I need a guitar player. I know you play. I know you're good. And I had like previously mixed a song for him. So he was like, I know you're like a sound guy and you got to be a great guitar player. Come play with me. So I went and played with him. And that's how I met Paloma. I wasn't even going to go play for him. I was like, at first I was like, no, I don't really want to get back into that whole world because it was such a letdown, you know, in Nashville. It was so hard. And so I went, and the first night of rehearsal, like that's when Orma was there. So it may have been the second, because I think I think maybe I played with him once before. And then the second time I played for him, we rehearsed at a rehearsal space, and there was Paloma. And yeah, it was like instant connection. I like felt like I knew her, and like she kind of had the same thing with me. And it was so weird. Just her playing on the drums, I was just like, damn, like she's so good. And so we just started hanging out and became really close really fast. And the music just kind of like found its way because we started playing together for other people, for another gal that we were playing for, another big artist. And we toured a little bit with her. And then she heard some songs I had on file, and she was just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you, you're not an editor. And I was like, oh, like, I don't know. She's like, we need to finish these songs and like write new ones and like make a thing. And she was like, why don't we have our own band? And then it just like, it like hit us, you know? So it happened so fast. Cause like, I was not looking for anybody or anything. I was so far removed from that. In fact, I was going to leave LA and like go back to Oregon, cause I was so burnt out on just everything. And it just happened. And yeah, I fell for her. She's just so amazing. And it's been just kind of like a mysterious thing that's linked to that guy. And what's crazy is I ended up telling that guy all this stuff because I went to Mexico and I had been doing the stone thing too. Everywhere I went on hikes, I would move stones. And I went on this trip in Mexico and I grabbed these stones and I was with my family. It was like a family trip, and I blew in the stones and I said a prayer and I left them in this spot. And to make a long story short, it's crazy, but like Paloma and I were on tour with this guy, or she was on tour and I went to be with her on a tour that she was on. And I flew to Mexico and we went for a walk one night on that beach, and the stones were that I had left. I didn't know that we were by that spot. And we walked by the spot and I recognized the resort. And I said, wait a second. And I walked over where the stones were, and the stones were there. And I told her the whole story, and she was just like, what? And then I told her about the guy, and like, yeah. And so Paloma started barefooting with me, and you know, the rest is history. We barefoot like once or twice a week, and you know, I could never stop now. But there's something to the internal world versus the external world. And I think my whole life I've spent trying to move everything and make everything. And I still struggle with it, but like, I've learned a lot from Paloma. She's so spiritual. And like, you know, your external world is a reflection of your internal world. And until you deal with stuff like on the inside, the outside is not, it's going to stay the same, or things aren't going to move. But what's weird is when I started dealing with a lot of that internal stuff and barefooting and becoming more spiritual, it was like everything on the outer like started to shift and things started to happen like really fast. So, you know, it's even a reminder to myself right now sitting here that like you have to always make time for that, you know, the internal world, whether that's meditation or barefoot hiking or connecting with spirit or God or whatever that is to you, the universe, you know, because it's a huge part of like what's happening in your life. And I think, I don't know if a lot of people really even know. I didn't know. So, you know, sorry.
Oh my God.
I didn't turn into a rant.
That wasn't, it was just, it was actually really beautiful. And two things struck me. One, you know, Paloma said she looked at you and she knew. She was like, oh, there you are. And so I shared a story with her of something that happened to me that was similar in my life, about someone who became a dear friend. And the second thing was, bless your heart for growing up in a quote unquote redneck town in Oregon, because how polite are you? You're on this mountain, on this run, your back is killing you, and some rando walks up to you out of the shrubbery, no less. And you are so polite and you talk to him and you like let him tell you all these. You don't run away. You don't like awkwardly disengage and say, look, I gotta go. I gotta go. I gotta be somewhere. Yeah. You sit there and you listen. I'm just impressed. I want you to know.
You know, I have to tell you, in a previous time, I would have walked away, but I think I was, life has a way of like humbling you. And I was at a point in my life where I felt so humbled by everything. I just was like open to things. And I finally had just like let my guard down from everything and was just like, okay, like, asking God, like, what do you want from me? Like, what do you want me to do? And it was just like, it was like the right timing. It was weird. It's really weird. I've told him that story. He knows. I've stayed in touch with that guy. He is a Native American guy, and he is so cool. I mean, he's just such a trippy dude. He goes and hikes these mountains. He's hiked Mount Whitney barefoot. He's done like, he's insane. He goes to these villages and he does, you know, the ceremonies that they do. I can't remember what it's called, but where they actually hook you from your chest.
Oh, yes.
He's done all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, he's got elders, and he's told me stories about him and his elders and like how they've blessed rocks for him to take up to these mountains. And he carries these rocks all the way up these mountains and leaves them and says prayers. And it's really gotten me into Native American culture and just have a way more of a respect for just that history, that part of our past that has kind of been buried and, I'm sure a little bit controversial, but like it's something that to me, I feel a connection to and I'm just drawn to. I'm a white boy. So, you know, it doesn't it doesn't make any sense, but it's like I feel connected to that culture and would like to get more into that somehow someday. But
well, what's remarkable about your story is that he must have seen you, on your run and or walking or whatever you were doing. And he saw something in you and he thought, I have to give him this message. Does that make sense?
100%. I mean, I think he could sense. I think he was more tapped in than I even know. I think he is more tapped in than I even know, because he was out doing his thing and saw me and just like they went right up to me and
he changed your life. And I love, what was his first sentence? You probably think it's strange that I'm not wearing any shoes.
Yeah.
What an opening line.
Oh, no. That's fine. I had no idea, because everybody thinks that of me now. You know, I'll be walking on a path. I mean, we go hike like treacherous trails barefoot and people are looking at us like we're homeless or something, you know? I mean, they grab their children and pull their children away from us. And I'm like, it's okay. We're just barefoot. Like, you realize that people were barefoot before they invented shoes, and they kind of like look at you like you're just like a lunatic. This guy has been out here living in the woods. He's barefoot. I'm like, no, I'm a normal guy. So I wear my AirPods more when I hike so that they know I'm like a normal dude. I have AirPods. Like, it's cool.
Oh my God. Talk about a little bit of prejudice, I'd say. I mean, there are.
Yeah. I mean, we're conditioned, you know, but.
Yeah. See how much more loving you are than I am right there.
I mean, it's a weird thing. Like, you don't think of like, you know, you go on a hike and people are not barefoot. I mean, more and more so, we see more and more people up here where we're at. We go up through Topanga Canyon and hike up there in LA. And it's Topanga Canyon is a very spiritual place. It's like, you know, it's got a lot of people who are like Sedona, Santa Fe. There's like an energy up there through Topanga Canyon where it's like a lot of musicians and artists. And so you see more people doing it. I've seen a few people barefoot and I'm like, oh, my people, you know, it's so funny. It's hilarious.
I love that. We're, here we are. And I haven't even asked you the second question of the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
No. Well, are you kidding? Actually sitting here thinking, my God, you're very good at relating. I mean, your storytelling capacity is immense and you're captivating in the way that you tell your stories. So it has been just an utter pleasure to sit back and not have to talk. I have to let you know.
Oh my gosh.
That,
okay,
but
cool.
It probably thank makes you, you an, ex- that's what makes you an exceptional, you know, musician. Absolutely. And with the capacity to write these incredible songs. But my second question is, you know, did you grow up in a religious household? And what did that look like for you as you were growing up? And how did that change over time?
Yeah. My grandma has always been very, not religious, but I would say a lover of the Bible. And so my whole life, she was going to church and, you know, telling me to go to Sunday. You got to go to Sunday school or church, and trying to get me to go every Sunday. And my stepdad that raised me with my mom, they would go to a Christian church where it was like, I think it was like, I'm trying to remember the it doesn't matter the denomination, but it was Christian. And I would go, and it was like, I always hated it. I had my own connection with God and spirit, but like, I just didn't like the organized religion thing. And then I was a really wild kid growing up. I mean, I got kicked out of public school 4 or 5 times and then put into private school. And then they tried to homeschool me and that didn't work. And then I got kicked out of the private schools and they tried to put me back in public school and I got kicked out again. And then finally they put me into a Christian school, and the Christian school is just like torture for me. It was like torture, you know, and I would like show up to school wearing like a Slayer t-shirt or a Pantera t-shirt. And I was like a skater kid, you know? So I was just like, and they would be like, we're going to pray for you. And I would just like get under their skin left and right, you know? And before I played drums. So like before church, I would bring in my double kick pedal and I would put the double kick and I would just be playing like metal, you know, trying to like rock out. And I was always trying to like get kicked out of there, you know, but they were the ones that put up with me and like dealt with me for many years. I think I was there for like 2-3 years. And then I think I got kicked out of there too. But, I was raised up around, you know, the general belief. And then the Christian school really pounded it into me because they made us read the Bible and they got into Revelations, and just, it just was all so like confusing and scary and like, oh, you know, the end times and all this is going to happen. And I went to a Christian camp and there was people who they said were possessed and they had to pray for them. And it was just, it was wild. And I just, it kind of put a bad taste in my mouth with religion. So I think that's why spirituality has always been like my church, you know, has always been like your own personal connection with source or God or the universe or this presence that is like always with you, you know, which is why I love the NDE stuff, because there's hundreds of thousands of cases of people who have left their bodies and seen what it is and come back to tell, and they can prove it because they tell everybody, hey, I saw what you were wearing. I saw what you were talking about. I saw what the surgeon was saying over here to Nurse Betty about her aunt and uncle and the whole thing that's going on with her family. And they come out and say this, and the people are like, what? Like, how would you know all those details? And there's hundreds of thousands of those cases. So it's like, you know, for me, it's like, I know there's something. I know there's something way more than this physical realm. So.
Have you listened to the telepathy tapes?
No.
Oh, no. Dear. Okay.
I have to.
So I think they're on episode. I'll send you the link. Okay. I think they're on episode 20 something now, but this last episode was about NDEs. And she talks to,
is that the ghost one with the flowers? The roses. Oh, okay. I listened to that one.
This is a podcast that came out last year that has exploded.
Oh, this isn't your podcast.
No, it's not. No,
okay.
No.
Okay.
And she talked to two of the most prominent NDE researchers in the world right now. And the stories that they told on this last episode, I was like, I didn't know this story. I mean, just insane stuff, but beautiful. Beautiful. So yeah, you would love
I'm gonna check it out.
Yeah, the you and all tapes. The other billions of people who are listening to the telepathy tapes will love it. So
I love it. No, I love that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love
totally.
It.
Totally. Well, I think
and especially when you lose people in your life, you become more curious about, you know, I lost my grandmother recently, and she was the one that raised me, you know, when things were going on in my family and my household. She took me in, and she was just a rock in my life because I was so rebellious and she was the one that was like, it's okay. You can be who you are. I love you no matter what. I got your back, and let me be me. And that was kind of when I came out of all that stuff, is because I had somebody who was like, not judging, not condemning, not trying to punish me for it. She was just loving. And when she passed, there was so many weird things that happened of her coming through and trying to communicate with me. And to this day, there's things like signs and things that happen. And it's, you know, I'll be somewhere and I know she's there. It's just like a presence. And I'm like, wow. So I've gotten more into it since she's passed, because I feel like I want to connect more with her. And, you know, I'm always curious, like, where are you? Where are you? Like, I know you left your body. I know your body's gone. I know you're not here, but I know you're here. And so like, what is that? Like what? And so you just become fascinated with that stuff. And I'm sure it freaks other people out, but for me, I'm kind of like, I don't really care, you know, I'm going to do me, and that stuff always just feels right.
So. I'm sorry about the loss of your grandmother. Oh, no. Is this the grandmother who was good at math?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she was. No, she lived a long, full life. She was 98, and she went through every health thing you could imagine and still kept pulling out of it. So when she passed, we were all like shocked, because she was so tough that when I'm going through stuff, I just am like, how did you do this, grandma? Like, how? How were you 90 and still waking up every day and like, hi, how are you? Like, it's a beautiful day outside. And you'd go down and play cards. She couldn't even use her legs. She was in a chair for like the last 20 years of her life. And she just went and played cards every day and did stuff for people. If somebody was mean to her, she'd go get them a gift and bring it to them. I mean, she was just like, so, you know, it's like, you have somebody like that in your life, and they're always just kind of, you know, when they leave, it's like they're with you. You know it. You can just kind of like sense. So I feel like she wasn't really around for like the music stuff that's happening now. She was on the cusp of it. Like, I wanted her to be around once we finished the vinyl and the album, because that was a big deal for her, because she was the one that got me guitar lessons and pushed me towards music, you know. But I feel her there, because there's these little signs and things that happen where she's like, oh, I'm here. I'm a part of that. You know, I'm involved with what's happening, and it's really cool. So
yeah. That's so beautiful. I love that she was such an advocate for you. And okay, so first of all, I want to let you know that I love, this is probably, I hope this doesn't upset you, but I love the idea of you as this rebellious kid who's just creating mayhem all the time. And then you have this grandmother who's like, let me buy you lessons. Let me do these sweet things for you. Let me be your advocate. And it's like, amidst all of this like chaos and the things that were happening, you have this really staunch ally. How gorgeous, you know?
Oh man, so blessed. I don't think I would still be, I don't think I'd be where I am. I think I would be much worse off if it wasn't for her. Cause, you know, as a kid, you know, coming from kind of broken household home and stuff in your between your parents, you know, it's like to have somewhere where you can go, where it's safe and it's just secure and stable. That was huge. It was huge. So yeah, she's such she was like that with everybody. I mean, when we went to her memorial, it was just packed. And every single person was like, she changed my life. She changed my life. You know, it's like, she just made such an impression. Even the people that took care of her, her caregivers were like young teenage girls who went to prom, and they would come see her before their prom. because she was so involved in everyone's life. You know, she was so selfless. She could care less about herself. It was like everybody else was like, you know, so I'll just spend the rest of my life trying to be like this much of that, you know?
Well, I think you're well on your way. I myself have been described as a chaos gremlin by other people, but that's at this age, not when I was younger. So I guess better late than never. I would love to ask you the main question of the podcast. I mean, frankly, you've already shared one story about the gentleman while you're on who is barefoot, but I'd love for you to share, you know, another story if you'd like about something magical or miraculous or mysterious that you've experienced.
Yeah. Oh man. I feel like that story was probably the most mysterious thing and just the most life-changing thing that happened for me in my life. But, I would say, I think just the whole journey, I think, of music has been very mysterious because I've tried to get away from it so many times, and I've given up and I've quit and it just keeps coming back for more. Like, I don't care how far I get away from it. It's like, no, you're going to do this. And even when I'm like, I can't pay my bills with this. What am I going to, it's like something else comes in and it's like, no. You got to keep hanging on. You got to keep doing this. You got to keep just stick with it. Like for whatever reason, it's happening later for me. I don't really know the reason, but I keep getting this sense and this intuition that like, you're going to find out, what's happening in the future and why it took so long and why you had to go through all these detours. So I think like maybe another mysterious story would be, becoming so many other things other than music, you know, learning editing, finding myself, because there's so many things that I found through editing. I mean, before editing, I didn't believe in myself. I couldn't figure things out. I was very insecure about problem solving and trying to figure things out in life. Everything was kind of hard. I still had that impression that there was like something wrong with me, you know, the whole ADD thing, like growing up, that was like the thing that I got labeled with. And so I was in this weird, still in this state of mind of like, you're not smart. You can't figure things out. You can't do things. You're kind of dumb, you know? And editing just like pushed me over this threshold where I had to figure things out. I had no choice. You know, I was put on these TV shows where like, I didn't even know what I was doing. I had to stay up all night until 4 or 5 in the morning to figure out how to transcode footage and codecs and stuff that I would have never imagined, like that I could learn and figure out. And I became like a tech guy. And it's weird because like now in my life, like I'm a tech guy and everybody comes to me when stuff doesn't work, you know, like it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is. Like it can be the worst, something that we just got called over to one of Paloma's friends. She couldn't figure out this like wireless pedal board thing or something she was going to use. And I just was like, oh, did you try to re-update the firmware and do this? And I flipped the switch and it started working. So like it got me to a place in my life, I guess where I'm going with all this is like the detours in life are all a part of, where you're supposed to be. So like, you know, if you're doing something that you don't want to do, it all adds up. It all ends up adding to what you're going to be doing because there's no way we could have mixed this album ourselves or, you know, done all the audio or edited everything if it wasn't for Paloma's background in composing and for film and TV and my background in editing for film and TV and doing audio and sound design. So it's like, I think the mysterious story or the journey is like thinking music's over, completely signing off. I'm an editor now, you know, and this is life. And then it's like, boom, like life comes back around with like, nope, I got some surprises up my sleeve. And to me, I guess that's kind of the same story with the guy and meeting the Native American guy and the spiritual aspect of it. But it's so crazy to me because I can't tell you how signed off I was on the fact that like, this is done. Like it's done. I gave it my best shot. I got beat down. There's no way I'm going to do this again. Like, it's over. And it's just so weird. It's happening much later in my life, but it's so beautiful to like share it with somebody that you love and care about, and to meet Paloma, to also meet somebody who's like your soulmate. And it's like, I could have never, you know, guessed that like, oh my God, I'd get to start all over again and do a whole new project and do it with somebody that you love. It's just, it's wild. So to all those people who are in a place where they're like, you know, I don't love my life, I don't love what I'm doing, like see it as like, it's all part of the journey. It's all part of the pathway, you know, and all roads kind of lead you to where you're supposed to be. So you can't be in the wrong place. You can't be doing the wrong thing. You're exactly where you need to be. Like you're exactly where you need to be. Even if it feels like it's over, you know, I'm not supposed to be here. I shouldn't be doing it. Like you're exactly where you need to be. It's gonna work out.
You should have a t-shirt that says you're exactly where you need to be. Just walk around with it on.
I love that. We've been thinking of new merch ideas. So
nice. I'll push everyone out of the way to buy the first one.
Well, we're going to have to somehow like quote you on that. You know, we got the idea from you and like put it in something.
Amazing. Amazing.
Can't just take that, you know, I mean, come on.
Well, I think there's something, just 2 points. One, I think there are literal angels walking around in this world who, when we need the words, when we need to hear something, they will just show up, whether it's out of the shrubbery or in my case, walking along a sidewalk. Or I've had 2 encounters, 3 really, where complete strangers came up to me and said, I need to tell you something. And then it like changed my life. Yeah.
No way.
Yes. Believe me, my life has been very strange.
Do you mind me asking what they said?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I was at orientation for seminary to get my master's of divinity in Colorado and Denver. And I was sitting under a tree reading one of my textbooks. It was 10 days up there. And I kind of looked up because I have trouble concentrating on something. And I see this woman walking about 15 feet away from me on the sidewalk, away from me. And she looks a little like she's not barefoot, but she looks a little bit suspect. And I'm like, oh, I think something's, she's not right. Something's wrong. And so I, you know, looked back down. I said, don't make eye contact. And then I looked up again and she was looking right at me. And I saw her look at me and then shake her head. And then she started walking away where she was going. And then she shook her head again and then looked at me and said, come here, and beckoned towards me. And so I said, you know, I'm like, la-di-da, I am in seminary. I need to be nice to everybody. I will go talk to this complete stranger. So I, you know, scampered across the lawn and went up to her and she said, I have to tell you 4 things. I was like, okay. And she said, you are not who you are in the mirror. Always remember that. You look in the mirror, but that's not you. Things on the outside are going to change, but the inside is the only thing that matters. And I was like, okay, this is not what I thought she would be telling me. And then she said, also, you're supposed to be doing what your mandate is in this life, not what everybody else thinks you're supposed to be doing. Everyone else has all these ideas for your life. And they're like, you should be doing this and this and this. And she's like, no, you're supposed to be doing what you're here for. And that's going to be tough, but you're going to have to do it. And I just gotten in a huge fight with my dad because he said, you know, why are you going to seminary? What, you're not even religious. What's going on? And I had this funny throwaway joke where I said, I'm going to create the church called the Church of No Bullshit. And it's going to be the Church of No BS. And our tagline is going to be, we put the fun in fundamentalism, or we're fundamentally about fun, or something like that. So, and my dad got mad at me and he's like, how dare you? Like, education was very important to him and it was higher education. So he went off on me. It was really bad. So it was interesting that she said that because I was like, my God.
Whoa.
And then she said, you need to forgive yourself. And she said, you don't know, but there is a train that is going around And it's waiting for you. You're at the station and it keeps coming around waiting for you to step off the station, you know, platform and get on the train. And the train is where you're going to forgive yourself. And I said, my God, how long will the train be going around for me? I mean, what are we talking about? And she said, the train is eternal and it will always be there when you're ready to forgive yourself for whatever.
Oh my God.
And then the fourth thing was, I can't remember what the fourth thing was, but anyway, I was like, Oh. And then she said, you know, I come from a family of women in South America. We all have powers like this and we're supposed to tell people things, but my sister and mother have kind of gone to the dark side. And she said, the last thing I'm going to say to you is you're going to see me one more time in this lifetime and I'm going to walk right past you. And I'm going to pretend like I've never spoken to you and I'm not going to acknowledge you. And I was like, okay. I mean, I was just like shell shocked. I was completely just like, I don't understand what's going on. Gosh. You know? Afterwards I like walked into class and my classmate was like, what happened? I was like, something just happened to me outside. I don't know what just happened. Anyway. So a few days later, I walked right past her. She didn't acknowledge me. She didn't say anything. And I never saw her again.
Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. Those are the kind of things that, you know, you can just like ignore that and be like, oh, what a crazy person, or pay attention. And that's the hard part, is like trying to learn to see the signs, you know, and go like, okay, maybe this isn't just like a random coincidence. That's the thing you said about forgiveness is huge. That actually really clicked for me, because I also think that, you know, until you forgive yourself and other people, it's like there's these blockages and it like blocks the flow from new things coming into your life. Like I feel like everything's energy. And like, if you don't understand that, it's like, you just kind of like everything's physical and you're just trying to make everything happen yourself. But like what I was saying earlier, that internal world is like so huge. I feel like it's more about the internal world than it is the external. So like the people that don't ever deal with anything, you know, they don't ever deal with their stuff. You just keep getting the same results over and over and over. And that may be why it takes some of us longer to get where we want to go, because we haven't dealt with those internal things. And when you said that forgiveness thing, that just like, that rang a bell for me, because that's also what I did with the guy, the Zach guy, is I had a bunch of these shells that I had collected for years from my ex, through my marriage and from going to the beach, and rocks and shells. And I just never touched them. And it was a weird thing. I left them there. And when I met him and I started doing the stones thing, I took every single one of them up to these different mountains and hiking points, and I would bless them and I would forgive her and I would forgive myself and leave them there. And I saw the guy later and I told him that I was doing that, and he like stepped back, and he took like four steps back, and I was like, what? And he was like, you're moving like a lot of energy. He's like, there's going to be a lot of things that happen in your life, like really fast. And I was like, okay, is that bad? He's like, no. He was like, just be ready. And I was like, oh my God. So, you know, that forgiveness thing is like, that's really, I mean, I feel like that's kind of what the lady was really getting at with whatever journey you're on now, is like forgiving yourself and then choosing the path that you need to be on.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get on the train. I'm still trying.
May be on it though, and you don't even know. That's the crazy thing. It's like you may already have gotten on it with what you're doing with the podcast and everything, you know? Like this may be the thing, the path that she wanted you, you know? It's like you gotta follow whatever that is, you know, your actual purpose, not the one that everybody else wants for you, which is so common.
I know. Have you noticed that a lot of people have opinions in general?
Oh my gosh. I can't even talk. It's so hard to even talk about like what we're doing with music. People think we're absolutely insane. like at our age, you know, and in the stage in our life, all of our friends have kids and houses, and, you know, we're still renting, and we're still, you know, we live very, very simply. I mean, we live, you know, by any stretch of the word, like pay to pay, paycheck to paycheck, wherever we get paid, you know, it's like, we don't, I think people would think a lot differently of like, oh, you know, like from the outside, it looks like, oh, you guys are crushing it with me. Like, it's a really hard path with music. And I think it's starting, the payoff is going to be much greater than the struggle and the journey. But it's like, you can't talk about that kind of stuff with people. I mean, you can, but it's like, it's very controversial, because it's like, what? Like, what are you doing? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you just spent all your savings on, you know what, an album, and like, you know, or you went into debt over an album, or like, it's just crazy. Like, people are like, what? And then it's like, your belief in something, your purpose, your higher purpose is so much more important than all the material, the payoffs now, you know, like the comfortability, I don't know if that's even a word, comfortability. Comfortability. Like, right now I just want to be comfortable right now. I want to have my dessert right now. You know, I don't want to suffer. I want to be safe, secure. I want to work towards my retirement. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, for us, it's like, now I realize what I was doing in the beginning with music. It's like, there's a sacrifice, you know, I think, to get to where you want to be. And it's okay. It's like, the way that music makes us feel is so much bigger than having luxuries and all those things. So it's like, we don't feel like we're working when we're doing it. It's amazing. So yeah, like, I'm sure with your podcast, it's the same thing. It's like, this is not work to me. I absolutely love this. Like, I love talking to people, making these things, you know. I think that's what it's supposed to be. Your job is, you're not supposed to dread your job every day. And I was in that world of waking up and being like, oh my God, I literally can't go do this again today. I can't. Oh, how am I going to get through this today? Like, every second, like, I'm going to look, okay, I can go look at Facebook or social media and just scroll, you know? And it's like, you don't realize how miserable you are.
Yeah.
You kind of hide it, you know, and pretend like everything's good. Everything's okay. This is what everybody does, you know?
Like, yeah. Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. Okay. Because I think you find this interesting, because I want to just speak to your, you know, as we wrap this up, I want to speak to your conviction and your, you know, you referenced your intuition about music and like that muse mm-hmm. calling you and wanting you, bringing you full circle back into this and right. things showing up for you and things happening for you so that, you know, you're on the right path. This podcast is a lot of work. It's exhausting. It is, you know, I 100%. Am not only interviewing people, but trying to get guests. And then, you know, you're on during the interviews, which I am kind of on in general in the world. I annoy a lot of people in that way, but we don't talk about them. but there have been periods over the last 5 years where I have said, because I'm very salty with whatever is out there and a little bit of a biatch, I'll put it that way, but they know that I'm salty and a biatch. And so I'll be like, all right. I played around with, this is not good. Okay. I don't advise this, but you know, after a while I'd be like, I'm so tired. I can't do this anymore. It's so exhausting. Mm-hmm. And then within 24 hours, someone would send me a message and say, oh my God, I love your podcast. It makes me so happy. Oh my God, it was so powerful this week. Oh my God. And so it, you know, then things would go along. 6 months later, I'd be like, I'm like crying. I'm like, I'm so tired. I can't do this. I hate this. I hate it. And within like 24 hours.
I'm not laughing
hours,
at you. I just relate.
Yes. Relate. Someone would say, oh my God, I love it. Oh, please. This episode this week was so powerful. So anyway, so
it's the fuel. It's your fuel.
Yes. Yes. So after about three times of this, I was like, there is a weird pattern here. Every time I say I'm going to give up, within 24 hours, someone sends me a message. So one day I was driving in from where I live with my ex in White Rock, New Mexico, and I was exhausted. I was working like two jobs. I'm doing the podcast. I was just exhausted. So I'm driving and I'm crying. And I was like, I can't do the podcast anymore. Can't do the podcast. I'm driving. I'm like, I'm feeling so sorry for myself. And then I was like, but let me guess what? Let me guess what? Some jerk I know within 24 hours is going to tell me they love my podcast. And they're going to be like, your podcast is the best. And I just know. And I use salty language. I'm like, all right, assholes, let's see what you got this time. I was like, I'm so bitter and I hate you. Whoever is out there, like, whoever
playing,
like,
games with my life.
Yes, I hate you. And so I go to work and I'm at work working. And it's like 6 hours later, my dear friend Steve sends me a message and he's like, Kirsten, I have to tell you that this was the best episode I've ever heard in my entire life this week. It was so amazing. You're changing my life, or something like that. Like, this is the best. And I was like, okay, who is the asshole? It's me. It's me.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
So there's some reason, right? That the universe wants this podcast to happen. There's some reason the universe wants you and your creativity and your giftedness and all of it, creating this music and everything, wants and needs you in the world. So you escaped for a little while, but it brought you back.
I mean, you know, it's so true. Like, I can't tell you every word you said, how much that matches up with Paloma and I, because there's so many times where we felt like, that's it. Like, I don't know if we can keep going. It's like, it's too much. It's too much work. And then it's like something happens, something clicks, something comes through, something that just blows us away, where we're like, oh my God, I can't believe that. I can't believe that that guy who we've admired, like, literally commented on our music and was like, this, you guys, this is amazing. Like, little, just little, little things, you know, that dangle, that keep you like, okay, maybe we can do this. And then you keep going and you get where you hit another plateau and you're like, I can't, I'm ready to give up. And then it's like something else comes. And I think it's part of the journey, because if it all worked out, you know, a lot of times when it all works out for people, they don't appreciate it. And it doesn't last. It's not lasting. So I have this little, well, not a saying, but like a belief system that's like, the harder it is, the harder your journey is, the bigger the payoff and the bigger the reward and the longer lasting it's going to be. And the more of like a legacy and a thing that it's going to turn into, versus like a quick little, here you go, you're, you know, it's all working out. And then you get tired of it and you get burned. And you're like, okay, I'm done. So it's like, it keeps stringing you along enough to where you'll stay on the journey, you know? And not quit.
The universe is a stinker.
Yeah, it's very, I don't know what that word is, a paradox, you know, it's like a paradox, the way it teaches lessons. And I don't know if we'll ever understand like why until we're there, and then it'll all make sense, you know? So
your grandmother is going to meet you with a Bible and a math, you know, equation.
You know, I mean, right before, it was so funny, because I would try to explain to her, I'm spiritual, grandma. I still believe in God, but I'm not the Bible. Like, no, not. And she would get so upset, like, read the Bible, like the Bible, it's the Bible, you know? And she would, even right before she passed, I think it was a year before she passed, but Paloma and I went up and saw her and my mom, and we were sitting there and we kind of got into a little thing, and she was just like, I think the Bible. And I was saying, no, Grams, you know, it's my own personal relationship. And then I have to stop and go, you know, I have to respect her. This is what she grew up with. This is her. But she had very strong faith, you know? So, I think it all goes together, really. We're all trying to get to the same place, whether it's spiritual or the Bible or, you know, we're all just trying to get through this earth school, you know, that we're in, because that's really what it is like a school to learn many lessons and whatever.
One
that
you're not going to get kicked out of.
Yeah. I can't seem to get kicked out of music. So, you know, I'll keep trying, but I can't seem to get away from it. But
Reed, thank you so much. This has been fun. I keep using that word, but both the two of you are, I can't even imagine the two of you at a party or a gathering, because you're both hilarious and both have such a great sense of humor and down to earth and, you know, self-effacing and all sorts of stuff. I'm really excited for you and what's coming for you. Because I think it's going to be not only fun, again, there's that word, but fun, but also challenging and, life-changing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very exciting what's coming for you. Not like a Godzilla level event, but like something that is like a great, like, blessing for you or whatever. You know, it's like your grandmother's behind the scenes. She was an angel on earth, and now she's behind the scenes still being an angel. Yeah. She's moving 100%. The levers of the world for you.
100%.
So I just love that.
Oh, that means the world. Thank you so much. I 100% agree.
Wish they all could be only California dreams. I could cross that line, headed for summertime, driving up and down the coastline, headed for the sunshine, looking for a smooth ride.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Reed and his sharing about how life has kind of unfurled for him or developed for him, and how he never lost faith or hope that something better would arrive. And you're listening once again to Sun and the Saints, Take Me Back to California. I love this song. It's so great. I can't stop listening to it. So there will be a link in the episode show notes to Sun and the Saints website, as well as to their YouTube and their Spotify. So be sure to check out all the goodness that these two are bringing into the world. What really struck me about Reed's story was that he was open to the mystery. I mean, I made a little joke about how he was, you know, so polite to just entertain the man who emerged out of the woods. But yeah, there's something about people who grew up in small towns, I did as well, we're very, very polite, and I'd like to think that we're open to the mystery. I'd like to take this moment now for those of you who have listened to this podcast and are enjoying what you hear. Please do consider leaving a rating or writing a little review. Those ratings and reviews help other people find this little labor of love of mine, and you'd have my undying gratitude, which is worth so very much. So there is that. Here's where I'm going to say thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Reed. Be open to the mystery. I mean, I just was listening to his story about being on this run, his back is hurting, and this man comes up and just has this conversation with him, and Reed stays there, and he listens to the man, and he gives the man respect and consideration and his time and his energy, and guess what? As Robert Frost would say, that conversation has made all the difference, because pretty soon, once Reed started kind of bringing these practices into his life, his entire life changed. He got out of a job that wasn't serving him, that didn't feel good, and he's creating and crafting a life of his own even till today. He makes his own rules, he's his own boss. He gets to create beauty each and every day with someone that he deeply cares about. So be like Reed and be open to those opportunities, as strange as they may seem, because you never know where they're going to take you. Until the next time, listeners, I hope your days are filled with laughter, with listening to the Sun and the Saint, and believing that this world is here to make our dreams come true, is here to help us bring beauty into the world, is here to have our backs. That's your homework assignment for this week. And I'll see you so very soon for the very next episode of the podcast. I know. I did. I don't know if she told you this, but so her father and grandfather's movie, The Way, did she tell you?
She did tell me. Yeah,
was
she
part did. It's of amazing. This really bizarre and strange series of inexplicable synchronistic events that changed my life and made me walk the Camino and then go to seminary. It is the strangest. You did
the Camino. That's such a trip. When she told me that, I was like, what? Like, that doesn't even make sense.
I did the route from southern France to northern France and then along the Spanish coast. So I didn't do the party route, the Le Puy route. I did a route that was had more solitude. Yeah. And so
she told me, and then she was like, yeah, I wanted to tell her more because like, and I don't want to be the person that tells you, I want to let her tell you, but like, just like a brief summary, like her brother was like working with her grandpa on that film and then met the love of his life, and she's from Spain, and she lives at the place that it's like kind of like a farm, the Molino. That's where her family lived, and they like managed that whole thing, and then he met her, and then it all like they fell in love, and then they ended up getting married, and then the whole movie is like based off of them. So it's kind of crazy because like when you were telling her, she wanted to talk to you more about that.
Oh my God.
You know, but you guys had to wrap it up. No, and I was like, Paloma, like next time we're with your grandpa, next time we're hanging out with Martin, like you got to get him to sign something and send it to her. Like it's just crazy. It's like such a trip. It's like such a small world. And then me telling you also about the barefoot thing, because I've told her sister-in-law, Julia, who her brother fell in love with, like, I would love to barefoot, you know, I would love to go barefoot there in Spain and do least part of it. You know, I don't know if I could do the whole thing, but leave it up to me. I would try to do the whole thing, but you know, like, it's just that's such a cool story. That is just wild.
Of course, I was always supposed to walk the Camino. I knew that I'd done it in every lifetime, and it was just like an appointment that I was showing up for. Wow. So and I had like a movie version of the Camino. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I walked alone, and France had the worst weather it had had in 90 years. Lourdes flooded. Oh, it hailed and snowed on me in June. I mean, it was terrible. Everyone quit walking. So it was basically me walking by myself.
My God. That's a spiritual awareness and wake up call, because you have to get yourself through these things. You have to get yourself through these tests of like, I want to give up, you know, and you have to find ways to keep going and keep pushing through. I feel like that's part of, you know, hiking and barefooting too, is like that the pain part of it, the pain aspect of working through things in your body, working through things that you've held on to.
Yeah.
There's really no way to get through those things without going through pain.
Yeah.
You know, pain is like the great teacher. It's like, not to get all like, you know, I know everything, because I don't, but I'm saying like the most painful things are the things that I've learned the most from. So it's like, that makes sense. You know,
oh joy.
You're in this place. You're like, why did I do this? You know, but it changes you. So that's amazing.
And I want to tell you that I don't think of Prineville as a red hick, whatever you said. Okay. I mean, even when I lived in Oregon and I was in Portland, I did not think of Prineville so this is a revelation for me. I just like.
Well, Bend is like a mountain town. You know, it's like an Aspen, Colorado. It's a cool town, but an hour outside of Bend in Prineville, it is like rodeo central, jacked up trucks, guns in the back window. Like,
I love rodeos.
No, I don't have anything against that. It's growing up there as a skater, artistic skater boy, and getting completely pummeled by these cowboys and having to survive. And all their girlfriends like you because you're a nice guy. And they're like, we hate these skater punks. Like, we're going to chase them down and fight them every 5 seconds. And like, I mean, it was like survival.
My God.
Survival. If I got into stories with you about Prineville, your head would spin. You'd be like, I can't believe that happened to you. I mean, getting shot at by cowboys, you know, chased in the back country roads, they're shooting 22s at you. And I mean, it was getting run off the road. I mean, you get to a point where you get to be like Dukes of Hazzard in your Honda Accord. In my Honda Accord, I'd have like six people in my car, and they would just be like, I'm so scared to ride with Reed because he's going to jump the car over this thing. He's going to run the cowboys through this little tiny school where the two buildings are only the size of the car. And he's going to go 50 miles an hour through those two buildings. And the cowboys are going to skid out because they can't make their big trucks through there. And I mean, that was like a daily. They're like, what's Reed going to do this time? And I would toy with the cowboys. You know, I would toy with them. So
it reminds me of, did you ever see Blues Brothers where they go through that mall?
Yeah. It's exactly, that's it. I mean, you're just like, instead of cowering, you're like, I'm just going to make this a journey. You know, I'm going to like see how far I can get before something bad happens, you know? Oh God. Prineville. That'll be a book. My best friend, Rob, and I, he's working on like writing down everything. And I gave him all of my stuff. I said, good. Here's my whole thing about my life. And he's slowly working. So I hope he gets to a point where he's like, I'm going to do like a book or something. And
oh my God, I will buy that book. If you want me to write a blurb, I'll be like equal parts Blues Brothers.
Yes. Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah. And Stranger Things.
Yeah, totally.
You're that's like, so finally, true. I've arrived.
Yeah, exactly. No, we were the Stranger Things kids for sure. It was all 80s. It was all flannels. It was all Nirvana. And, you know, like Rage Against the Machine and Foo Fighters and like all those bands, you know, like it was all that. But then we had to deal with all these cowboys on top of that. So it was
good God.
I was going to tell you, by the way, I was listening to a few of the episodes and I've been meaning to listen to it, but it seems like every time I get on to try to like do something, you know, for myself or for my own time, my own personal time, it's like the only time I get to do it is on a hike or when I'm like doing dishes or something else, you know? And so like I finally plugged in and I listened to a couple episodes and I thought it was really, really cool. Just the way you know, approach people and interview them. And it actually reminded me of, I don't know if you remember in Sleepless in Seattle where she's talking, the host is like talking to Tom Hanks. I can't remember his name from the movie, but your podcast kind of reminded me of like that vibe. Like it has a new kind of tone, but the way you're doing it had a very like raw and real and like organic. It kind of reminded me of that movie. I kept thinking like Sleepless in Seattle. So I had to tell you, you have to go and listen to that again.
I will have to, because that is such a huge compliment. I mean, the podcast was born out of desperation when I graduated from seminary and in the middle of the pandemic when there were no jobs. And
right.
I looked around and thought, okay, what am I going to do? And so this was kind of like a time filler, but it's turned into so much more. And, you know, looked around the other day and I was like, it's been 5 years since I've been doing it. This is insane. Oh my God, how time flies. The good news is that I have improved. You know, the first episode took about 25 hours to produce and now I'm down to 3. But also, you know, dear friends who love me have mentioned that the production values have gotten better too. And I was like, dear God, I hope so. It's been 5 years.
No, it sounds really good. You. It sounds really good. I've actually worked on a few podcasts in the audio world and like, I know how much goes into stuff. So, you know, everything that we went into our project and every other project I've worked on, it's like audio is actually, I feel like audio is more work than audio and video.